Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
This week's episode of Book Cheat is brought to you by Audible. To get started with Audible, go to audible.com/bookcheat or text bookcheat to 500-500. Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnke, and as always, we're going to look at a classic this week. And joining me to look at such a classic, it's the Primates boys themselves, Evan Munro-Smith and Matt Stewart.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going? We're the Primates boys. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
You're also a couple of my prime mates.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Is that a pun?
It is. It is.
Yes.
You are a king of puns, Matt, so much so that you put a podcast that you've been doing for over 2 years in, and it's been a pun the whole time.
Whoa. Hiding in plain sight.
There it is.
My favourite place to hide.
Was that something that you came up with, Primates? Did you have a list of things you were going to call it all?
Yeah, I had a list, and it was the first name on the list, because it's the most obvious one.
Yeah, why would you go past that?
Yeah, which, and then I
got... Why did you keep going?
Well, I had it, and then I... Well, I don't... I think I asked our patrons to hit me up with any possible names as well. And then I kind of regret it because I'm like, I'll stick with mine.
Yeah. I think you're going to say
end
you
up
regret
being like
it
an arsehole.
Because there's 11 people that said, how about Primer Mates? And you're like, oh, God, it's so obvious.
I think someone did later say on there, oh, you used my suggestion. I'm like, no, but...
but thank you.
Thank you. probably it is that kind of one where... probably everyone came up with it.
Well, it feels obvious because the concept of the show is it's you watch things with primates in popular culture.
Yes.
And then you and your second banana here, Evan, mm-hmm. and then often a guest, go through and talk about such things. So you've got your King Kongs. You've got your Simpsons episodes that I've been on a few of with chimps and the like.
That's right, yeah. And, yeah, we've gone through a lot of them. It was funny. It took us so long to get... to King Kong.
That's the first one that came to my mind, and
like
I knew that it was like...
It was one of the... Yeah.
Episode 99 or something.
Until COVID, we'd had a bit of a hiatus because we did 100 episodes and we were like, oh, we'll have a break from this for a while. And then COVID hit and Evan and I were just looking for stuff to do. So we brought it back and we've been going through the Umbrella Academy from episode one all the way through to we're about to finish season two. Because it features a chimpanzee butler, CGI chimp butler.
Oh.
Yeah, named Pogo.
And is that a main character? Or is it?
No, not at all.
Love that. So are there episodes that go past where Pogo doesn't appear?
Pogo.
Several, yes.
Yeah. Pogo died in episode one.
We're on a streak at the moment. I don't think we've seen him for like four episodes.
Come back, Pogo.
You know, he's around. He's there in spirit.
He's
in
there in spirit.
Yeah. And one of the...
He's in a different time period.
One of the Umbrella Academy kids... is an ape man. He's had his blood infused with ape.
Oh, there you
or
go.
Or something.
Great.
We're not really sure if that's true. A serum.
Yeah.
You assume it was.
Evan always forgets the ape man. He's like, what
is what about Pogo?
He's just a bit buff, you know. He's not.
But
super
he's got an ape. If you see him with his shirt off, he looks like a massive gorilla.
You think that anyone who's buff, Matt, you like must have some sort of ape serum?
Yeah, probably.
I could never look like that, so neither could they.
Yeah. Hey, this is going to blow your mind, though, Dave. We are all apes.
What?
We're great apes.
Yeah.
New world, old world?
That's monkeys, man. What? We're great apes. The new world and old world are types of monkeys.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't even know that. And but I'm on primates.
Well, I'm the amateur primatologist of the show. Right. Evan really just sits in the sidecar and...
Evan's just a guy who knows an amateur primatologist. That's how far away you
That's
are from the
credibility.
I love it. Now, Matt, you've been on many episodes of Book Cheat. In fact, I think I've done about 25 this year, and maybe you've been on about 10 of them. So thank you so much. You're definitely the MVP, most vertical primate, of this show.
That's some film we definitely covered.
Oh, yes.
But we I think this all happened after I said to you, hey, Dave, why didn't you have me on at all last year? And you felt guilty.
You were off for a year and I've overcompensated and now you're like, please stop emailing me. I don't want to do this.
I've been working on Evan as well, trying to get him to invite me on a gamey game. And he's not quite as easily persuaded.
Well, Evan, here's my pitch to get on gamey game. I got a Nintendo Switch Lite.
Oh, yeah.
And I just bought an Assassin's Creed game that came out 8 years ago. So really with the time. Remastered, apparently.
Right, okay.
Number three, set during the American Revolution. You ever played that one?
No, I haven't played many of the Assassin's Creed games.
I've never played them before, but I'm enjoying it because it's blending history. So the nerdy part of me is enjoying the read, because there's little factoids that you can click on.
Edutainment.
Yes, and then also you get to stab people in the throat. So what a combo.
I like, because everyone would normally just click through those story parts, but you'd be sitting there with popcorn going, here we go now. Exactly. Now the fun begins.
Benjamin Franklin appears and I'm like, oh, about bloody time. Here he is.
Who do I get to play? Can I be Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, put me in there. But because that's been on so many times, Evan, I've been wanting to get you on for a long time. Your first time on here. I usually ask first time guests on Book Cheat if they're much of a reader now or if they've ever been one when they were growing up.
No, I'm not much of a reader at all. And I never really was.
That's cool. Because I asked because the reason I started the show a couple of years ago is I'd really fallen away as a young kid, and then maybe even early high school, I was big bookworm.
You were a champion readathon player, weren't you?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, another thing you can be.
Clock that world champion reader.
You did like the MS Readathon or something like that at school?
Oh, yeah, definitely would have done that.
Yeah, a bunch of that. My mum was also a children's librarian, so very much into sort of that kind of stuff.
Right. But Never graduated to adults. It's the saddest story I've ever heard.
I remember the book club sort of catalogs we would get at school.
Oh, they were fun. Like Is that cigarettes?
That's cigarettes.
Lucky Star was maybe the name of the club.
Like that. Yeah.
And then, I'd be circling books to buy.
Somehow that did make books more exciting. When you bring in consumerism, that's when books get fun.
Look at the colourful
I definitely remember that being fun, even though I didn't really have any much interest in books, but there were other things, right? There were extra things that weren't book. Like there were some toy things, I think.
Yeah,
that's how they got you in.
A few plush things.
That's all I was keen on.
Like, you know, Kinect pen sets and stuff like that. Like, oh, get me in there. Or get me that pens. That safe that's also a pencil case.
Yeah, stationery. Fun stationery.
That's fun stuff.
But it would have been branded as Where's Wally or something.
Oh, yeah.
Book adjacent.
Yeah, okay.
That's how they get it across the line.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. Matt, every time I have you on the show, you talk about you love to listen to audiobooks.
Yes. It's so funny to me that people still read with their eyes. I read with my ears because it is the modern age and I'm a modern man. And I've been reading a lot of books with my ears lately. Eyes closed. Let's get a book on. A few of them have been two about William Buckley, who is was an escaped English convict in Australia before Melbourne even existed. He escaped and lived in the bush for over three decades with an Indigenous tribe on and off. And so I'm listening to a couple of accounts of that, one called Buckley's Hope by Craig Robertson, and one called Buckley's Chance by Gary Linnell, who I'm going to meet soon and interview for a show I'm filming at the moment for Stupid Old Studios and C31 called The Beer Pioneer, where I go, each episode I go to a different craft brewery along the track that William Buckley...
the way he would have wanted it.
Yeah, exactly. Honouring him the way he would have certainly wanted this. He'd be very proud of his legacy.
Was he much of a beer drinker? Do you know that?
It's assumed. not a lot is known, but...
Right, but it would have been hard to come across. You'd think three decades in the outback, but maybe he found a way to ferment something.
Exactly. So I've been listening to both of those, but also every night going to bed, I've been listening to Sherlock Holmes, The Definitive Collection, as read by Stephen Fry.
That sounds like a good tip.
Just looking at it now in my app, I'm into up to the third story. And it was great to listen to you did an episode of this show about his first story, The Scarlet.
A Study in Scarlet.
I'm up to the third story. And I'm just looking at it now. It says 60 hours and 59 minutes left of the definitive collection.
You're closing in.
I've got a little ways to go. Apparently, he wrote a few books about him, Arthur Conan.
Yeah, quite a lot. Yeah. I mean, you get that sort of cash cow going. You're not gonna... Well, he did kill him off, and then he thought, no, I'll bring him back.
Yeah.
I'll bring him back.
You told us all about that on Do Go On. Jeez, have we plugged enough things so far?
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of media with us talking out there.
You did a special episode, or a normal episode of Do Go On about...
On Arthur Conan Doyle.
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, that's right. He believed
Why
in
was
fairies.
A special one?
I took that. I redacted that.
Story. Oh, right. Yeah. It was just a regular episode.
Did
regular
I redact it or I, what did I do? I
retracted.
Retracted,
maybe?
Thank you.
No, I'll redact it with some beeps.
You're not going to need me to be able to say words too much today, because yeah? They're not my strong suit. More of a listener than a speaker. Yeah, right.
Well, you do listen to the show.
I got two of these, one of these, and I use them in that ratio.
I don't know what he pointed at, but that's your imagination.
My cock and balls.
I've also done a report on today's author, and can I just say to you, gentlemen, Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Because this is the Book Cheat annual Christmas special.
Wow.
This third annual?
Exciting.
Third annual, yeah. So I've done...
I was on the first one, I reckon.
So we did Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
And that was when we all became massive dickheads.
Oh, yeah, we are such big dickheads.
We've been on board ever since.
And then last year I did Twelfth Night by Shakespeare, which... is vaguely Christmas adjacent.
Mm.
And then this year I am doing the Agatha Christie story, The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Which is a Hercule Poirot mystery.
Oh, great.
Matt and I are very big fans of the Hercule Poirot, Agatha Christie's Poirot is the name of the TV show with Sir David Suchet in the lead role.
Mm-hmm. You got me into it, Dave. I used to think it was just an old people show and then... Well, maybe it is. Maybe yeah. I'm proving that it is. Yeah. But ever since I've watched one, I'm like, oh, there's something about it. It's a bit of fun.
I've never seen
it. It's relaxing.
Do you recommend it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's an easy watch. But then also, if you really want to, you can really concentrate and try and work out the mystery. But also, you can just let it wash over you.
Yeah.
It's even though they started making it in the late 80s until 2013, it doesn't look outdated at all because it's all set sort of between the 20s and the 40s.
Sure, right.
And they spent, and as time went on, they spent more and more money on it. But like, yeah.
Right.
That's so smart. I always, you know, I watched the recent TV adaptation of Sherlock Holmes, the English one with
Benedict Cumberbatch.
And it already looks dated. But if they said it when it was written, it would still look great.
You'd be like, yeah, great. It still looks good.
Yeah, they tried to modernize it and it didn't go so
yeah,
well.
Yeah, so it's text messages and
oh, yeah, things appearing on the screen. And so
that would have been almost instantly out of date. But people love it. I found it a hard watch, but...
Fair enough. Stick to Poirot. There's many, many episodes over the...
Yeah, I should definitely check it out. I love a mystery. Mysteries are great.
Yeah, and Agatha Christie... The king or queen of
queen
the mystery.
Of mysteries.
That's right. The best.
I never know. Like, I find Evan hard to recommend things for because he's got weird tastes and he might love it or he might hate it and you won't know why. The reason he hates it is going to be strange and baffling.
I mean, it does. Okay. I'm worried because I know you like Fraser or Frasier.
He likes Frasier and he likes Weird Al Yankovic
yes.
and he likes Trent Reznor.
Yep.
Well, that's the second and third one.
Is there
a through
line
list
there?
No, the second and third of that one I could get behind, but
they're both musicians.
Frasier, I missed it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mind Fraser.
Yeah, the best part of Fraser is the theme song. Then you turn it off.
I love Fraser. I reckon it's a great
No, game. That's fine. That's fine. We just once did a Primates episode about it, and I was baffled.
Yeah, you're such a
was
nice,
about the cooking chip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was on the cooking
You weren't
show.
On that episode?
Maybe I was.
I forget that.
Yeah,
I don't
you
remember.
Were because I think I offended you with my confusion.
That's it. Yeah.
Sorry about that. You blocked it out. Fair enough.
Okay.
You blocked it out because it could have been it. You've done so many Fraser-based podcast episodes. That, how would you know?
We could do a Fraser podcast. Is that?
Yeah.
Maybe that's a bad
Frasing
idea.
The bar.
Yeah, Frasering the bar.
Frasering the
bar. I love it. I think that's a great idea. So people suggest that I do these books, and often people fill out a form. And they tell me why, and there's a link in the description to this episode, and then I'll give you a shout-out if I pick the book. This week is slightly different because someone tweeted to me, and I just took their idea and ran with it. So, at Singing Their Names on Twitter, thank you so much for tweeting at Book Cheat Pod about 6 weeks ago saying, hey, Dave, you should give yourself and all of us a present this year for reviewing a Hercule Poirot novel for your Christmas episode. And I said... What a great idea. So here we are with The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding, which was written by Agatha Christie and first published in the UK by the Collins Crime Club on the 24th of October, 1960.
A crime club?
Collins Crime Club.
Yeah, they published hundreds of books over many decades.
And they're all crime themed?
Yeah, they are. And apparently when I was looking into this, some of them, because they stopped making them in the 90s, are very valuable now if you can find. Ah. They have quite interesting covers.
I was sure you're going to say racist. Very
yes.
valuable.
Yes, they are. I imagine that some of them also are. So it features one of Agatha Christie's most famous creations, the mentioned Belgian detective Hercule Poirot, who first appeared in The Mysterious Affair at Styles 40 years earlier in 1920. So this is one of the later Poirot adventures.
Does he age?
He does a bit, but like not, it's not, you know, it's not.
It's not real time.
Not real time, yeah, because he would be like over 100 by the time this one's set.
He was old to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
He was sort of a retired police detective already.
Yeah, okay.
Have you read many of these books? I genuinely almost want to ask you if you listen to many of these books. Have you read many of these?
I haven't read too many, no. So growing up, they were always on my grandmother's shelf. She had a collection of all of them. She was a big fan of Agatha Christie, and it always fascinated me when I was growing up because they'd all be there, you know, and there was, I think, usually about three books or three stories to one volume, and then there was about 24 of them all lined up. Whoa. And they all had cool covers with like magnifying glasses and like gloves and stuff like that.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. But they definitely had a distinctive look, and they had pink writing down the side. And then when I got older, I read a few of those, but I've definitely watched more of the TV show, which I've seen all of it, than read them all. But I did enjoy reading this. And for people that aren't familiar, the author herself, Agatha Christie, is outsold only by the Bible and Shakespeare.
Whoa.
And is therefore the best-selling novelist of all time, whoa, selling an estimated 2 billion copies worldwide.
She must be rich.
Yeah, oh, yeah. She also led an extremely interesting life herself, and we have made a full Do Go On podcast episode about the time she herself disappeared for 11 days.
Huh.
That's right.
It was a bit mysterious.
Yeah. I've seen a fictionalized account of that where she went was to this house where she solved a crime. Like one of her characters.
Just a part-time
concept, yeah.
So we always start with the opening line, Evan, to give you a little bit of the author's writing before we go off script here.
Right.
So this is how the Adventure of the Christmas Pudding starts. "I regret exceedingly," said Monsieur Hercule Poirot. He was interrupted, not rudely interrupted. The interruption was suave, dexterous, persuasive rather than contradictory. "Please don't refuse offhand, Monsieur Poirot. There are grave issues of state. Your cooperation will be appreciated in the highest quarters."
Ooh.
And we are off.
That's a multi-billion selling author right there.
Yeah. Mm,
dexterous. Suave.
Such a description for an interruption.
Yeah, I know. Well, Hercule Poirot, the world-famous Belgian detective, is sitting in his Art Deco apartment at Whitehaven Mansions. The guest he is disappointing is Mr. Jesmond, who's trying to convince Poirot to leave his apartment for Christmas and spend it at a 14th century English manor house called King Lacey's. And he loves going out. Many of the TV show episodes, he's out in the countryside, always happens to appear at a dinner party,
right,
then there's a murder.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the original Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Jessica Fletcher turns up, you're like, oh, God, is it me?
Yeah.
Am I going to die?
Oh, no.
So Jesmond wants him to come over.
He wants to go to this manor house. We've heard Poirot was not interested, but Jesmond continues to try and convince the Belgian.
In a suave way.
Oh, yeah. Dexterous. Moving around. Flipping a coin on his fingers like a magician or something.
I didn't know. I haven't heard of this guy. Was he in other stories? Jesmond?
Jesmond, no.
He's not the replacement for Hastings or something?
No. This is very much just a one-off character. He's
fresh. Christmas pop-in.
Yeah, exactly. Poirot could enjoy a good old-fashioned English-style Christmas, he says. You'd love that. But I'm not English, counters Poirot. He says, but you'll get to see the snow. And he's like, but I do not like the cold. In fact, these days during winter, he doesn't leave his warm radiators in London.
Mm.
Changing tact, Mr. Jesmond explains that King's Lacey has modern radiators and a great hot water system, despite being hundreds of years old. In fact, Poirot might find himself too warm there. Poirot says, I very much doubt that. He's very specific.
Why is he so keen to get him there?
Yeah.
Does that become clear, or is it just one of those
Mr. Jesmond, growing increasingly desperate, he decides to explain the gravity of the situation that he finds himself in. And not himself, actually, but the 23-year-old man he's representing who's also in Poirot's house, who hasn't, until this point, said a word. Mm. The man is a prince from an unnamed country, the only son of a very powerful king, and he's next in line to the throne. He'd come to London a few weeks ago and is due to marry a cousin of the same blood. They very specifically laid that out.
Okay.
It's like, all right, thanks for mentioning it.
Not an adopted cousin. Yeah. Just so you know, this is full incest.
Full legit. Yeah, exactly. the wife and cousin-to-be, a well-educated young woman who studied herself at Cambridge. He'd made the journey to England for the wedding, this is the prince, and brought with him many of his family's famous jewels to be reset by Cartier.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
He's one of the big names in resetting.
Oh, yeah.
Is this Queen Elizabeth and Philip?
An unnamed prince.
Yeah. Prince Philip. Privacy reasons, but... Because they were cousins, weren't they? And remain so, I suppose.
I think, yeah, maybe distant cousins, though.
Right. Mm.
I mean, they're all related.
Yeah. Yeah.
All those people. Queen Victoria's
gotta keep children's that bloodline children. Pure.
Yeah, I don't. It's such a weird thing, isn't it? One of the jewels he brought to London was a very, very large and very valuable and very expensive ruby.
Ooh, they're the red ones, I reckon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know it.
The prince has not been as conservative as his father would have liked, and he's been living it up in London. He's bought the jewels. He's also brought the family jewels, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
He's been hanging out with some women, and he wasn't exactly discreet. One woman he'd clearly been trying to impress, and when she asked if she could wear the ruby on one of their nights out, he said yes.
Ooh,
and it's a very valuable, very expensive ruby.
Sounds like a mistake.
Such a weird thing to travel with.
Yeah.
Just to be like, hey, check out what I've got here.
They're just flaunting their riches.
Family jewel.
What else? What else are they for? Isn't that what they're for?
Yeah, I don't know.
If you had a ruby, what would you do? Take it places. Show it to people.
If there was any value in it, I'd sell it. Right. I imagine there is with this one.
There's a lot of value in this one.
Yeah.
Well, she wanted to wear it, and they'd gone out to dinner, and then she excused herself to powder
but
her
isn't
nose.
This guy, did you say this guy's getting married?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
So that's why
it seems
it's a little bit dodgy.
Yeah, okay.
So you're seeing this woman. She's asked, hey, can I wear the ruby? He's like, sure, I want to impress you. She wears it, goes to powder her nose after dinner, but she never came back. She slipped out another door and went into the night and has not been seen since, neither has the ruby.
That's it. I bet you, because I think on two different Poirot episodes I've seen so far, the culprit was someone wearing a wig. And it was very frustrating both times. But I reckon this one, this is what's happened again. She's reused the wig thing and it's his wife-to-be.
Oh, the whole time.
Yeah.
Ah, right.
Pretending to be another woman.
Yeah.
Because
she was onto him. She was onto him. And
yeah,
this
right.
is the revenge for him flirting and maybe more with another woman.
So at the altar, when they're exchanging rings, he looks down and his ring is massive and has a ruby on it. And she's like, it was me all along. And then she walks out on him.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and is arrested.
Yeah, exactly.
But then she doesn't have the ruby anymore?
No, she doesn't have the man or the ruby, but she's got her pride.
Okay, yeah. Right. That's what she wanted all along.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, this whole situation, the real situation, not this wedding thing.
This was quite convoluted so far.
So, giving a ring to a lady to impress her, she's stolen it, clearly been a bit dodgy the whole time, just trying to get his riches. This puts the prince in a bit of an awkward spot because he can't go to the police because if the story gets out, he's very famous in his country. It will cause a scandal. Why?
Right.
You're engaged to this lady.
Oh, right.
Why were you seeing another woman?
Yep. And why do you even have the ruby over there? I mean, surely you can come up with a cover story. I was showing a group of people a ruby and one of them snatched it and ran, you know?
That would have been better.
Yeah, I reckon it could have come up with something.
Yeah, well, definitely could have gone. And probably even better than what I did. But that was the first thing I thought of. So.
It's also explained to Poirot that the prince's wife-to-be is a very serious woman and would not stand for it.
Yeah, has a big wig collection, fake noses.
She's a big wig.
Yeah, often they put little snippets of, you know, clues for what's going to happen, and that's one of them. Not her best clue, to be honest. But they can't sweep it under the rug completely and just pretend it didn't happen because it's a very famous ruby in their country. It's like it basically is part of the crown jewels of their country, and with a long history of bloodshed and death related to it.
Jesus.
Even. And Poirot goes, bloodshed? gosh, I hope it doesn't come to that again. And the guy explaining it's like, no, it won't, but it's still a grave matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Poirot does sympathise, but from this passage, you really see the kind of people he's used to hanging out with. It's a quote from the book, "Poirot looked kindly at the downcast young man and then said, 'It is the time for follies when one is young,' he said encouragingly, 'and for the ordinary young man, it does not matter so much. The good papa, he pays up the family lawyer. He helps to disentangle the inconvenience. The young man, he learns by experience, and all ends for the best.'" Yes, growing up, did you have your family lawyer one call away to get you out of trouble at any time?
Oh, yeah, obviously you got the family lawyer on speed dial there.
If I was richer, I probably would have.
Yeah, probably. Evan's done it again.
Yeah, that is funny that he sort of, he almost feels sorry for him because he can't just get his lawyer on the line.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's what a time. Is that just how it was back then? Everyone had a lawyer. Everyone had trouble.
Well, Poirot does often mingle with high society.
Right.
So what's his? Where does Jesmond come into this?
Well, he's like a...
He's like a fixer
sent by the family to try and discreetly find someone like Poirot to solve this case, get the ruby back without any police or media ever finding out about it.
Yeah, right.
So he's sort of like... That's why he's discreet and dexterous.
Sure.
He works for very rich people like this to make things happen.
And that's why he's going to Poirot rather than Jap.
Yeah, exactly. Because Jap, I mean, who is... Another Agatha Christie character. He's a police detective.
Sure, okay.
And often Poirot shows him up and then eventually they become friendlier. But at first, you know, there was like, stay out of it, you civilian, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right. So is Poirot quite wealthy then if he's doing this with these sort of private jobs?
Yes, he is quite wealthy, yeah. Lives in a very nice flat in London and has in the later episodes has a butler and things like that.
Oh, right. And you said it was Art Deco. So, which is now kind of an old-fashioned style,
yes,
or is it still set back then?
Well, this one is actually more around the time in the 1960s when it's set. But, yeah, when he's in that apartment at the time, it is sort of more cutting edge.
Yeah.
It's, you know, new architecture and furniture. So feel sorry for the young prince. Finally, Poirot agrees to go to King's Lacey to join a family for Christmas. But before confirming... he isn't being deceived by the heaters. He's like, just to confirm, the heaters, are they really warming to saying that?
We're legit on the heaters.
So he's going to have Christmas with the royal family?
We're not sure at this stage why he's going to go to the countryside.
If it's not the woman who stole the ruby, it feels sort of pointless him going there.
Yeah, but...
They must have an inkling.
Yeah, they've got an inkling, but Agatha Christie hasn't shared that with us yet. We just know that it must have something to do with the ruby.
Okay, sure.
He disagrees to it. And Mr. Jesmond, this fixer... says that he'll explain to the family at King's Lacey a backstory as to why Poirot is there. Because Poirot's just turn up at a family. You know, I'm just a, you know, a Belgian man. Hello.
Long lost uncle.
Yeah.
But he does that every other week on the series.
But because he is highly connected because he's very famous. In the world, he is the most famous detective.
I think they're often my favourite episodes. I haven't seen anywhere near as many as you. I'm up to like the third season. But I love the ones where he's in the Mediterranean for some reason.
Yeah.
He's just trying to have a holiday.
And running into people.
Or is in Egypt or is that, that's probably...
Yeah, I love the, in Egypt, and there's one of my favourite ones from the TV show is called Murder in Mesopotamia because Agatha Christie's second husband was an archaeologist and she would go with him to the digs and help him out and things like that. So many of her stories end up being set around that, yeah, which is very cool. So cut to the next chapter and Poirot is at the old King Lacey mansion, a very comfortable 28 degrees Celsius.
It is pretty warm.
Warm for an English Christmas.
Almost uncomfortably warm.
Yeah. Is that a little too warm, do you think?
I think that's too warm.
I wouldn't be... That's the heaters or that's the temperature outside?
No, that's inside. Outside's probably like 4.
23 is what you want to see.
Yeah, 23 is pretty good.
28's cooking.
But is that what Poirot likes? How does he feel about this 28 degrees?
Oh, it's 68 degrees Fahrenheit or 20 degrees Celsius.
Oh, 20. Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
20, yeah, I'd say 20 is pretty good. Up to 23, that's sort of the range you want to be in.
Yeah.
Maybe 18 to 23, somewhere in there. I used to work in heating and cooling.
Yeah, we can tell.
You can probably.
You got the lingo.
I used to find it so funny there'd be people who want their heating system to be able to heat to 28 degrees. That would happen a lot. And they'd want their cooling to get it down to 18 degrees or lower. And you're like, Surely there's one temperature you like.
Yeah, don't you
want it? Why in the summer do you want it to be freezing and in the winter you want it to be boiling?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Just find a temperature and stick to it.
Never got it. I couldn't get it. Didn't get it.
And if you can't get it.
If I can't get it.
Professional.
Yeah.
Is that what you told him? I can't get it. And no one can. So put down the phone.
Yeah.
don't.
I can't help you.
Don't ring around.
Deal with it. Yeah. You're wasting my time. You're wasting your time.
Put on a jumper. All right?
Yeah.
So Poirot's there at this lovely old 14th century mansion, a real pile of a place. He has a good chat with Mrs. Lacey, because this is King Lacey mansion, who's very welcoming of her visitor. It seems she's been told that Poirot, being from Belgium, wanted to experience a traditional English Christmas. And through a friend of the family, there was an inn, and she said, oh yeah, we can have him. He can come round. And they have it to have him. Well, she is, but her husband, old Colonel Lacey, is a bit suspicious of this foreigner.
Maybe because he's about to murder someone.
Maybe.
Or has stolen the ruby.
But they know who he is, right? They know because he's famous?
He's world famous. That's the confusing thing sometimes.
Yes, he's world famous, but still at this time, especially in the earlier episodes, they're very suspicious of foreign people, especially during the ones that are set after the First World War and before the Second World War. They're very suspicious of people from the continent.
Right. Okay. What was Belgium's role again in the wars?
Being invaded.
Yeah. Well, pretty suspicious.
But because he speaks with his accent, people often mistake him for being French, and he says, no, I am Belgian.
Yeah.
Frequently having to say that.
French were also allies of the British.
Yeah, that's right. So, but no, they're just, you know, they were a bit more racist back then. Let's not dance around that. Yeah.
He's more strange.
He's a strange old man. I can understand this.
Yeah, so if you've got a family Christmas, and this colonel, apparently he's the one that drives the Christmas. He loves the trees. He likes it to be like, because he's lived in this mansion his whole life, he likes it to be like when he was a kid.
Right, yeah, okay.
So I want to go to this Christmas now.
Very traditional.
For Evan, can you describe, because it's obviously the books were written before there was any TV shows or movie adaptations. Can you describe how Christie describes Poirot traditionally? Head like a...
Shaped like an egg.
And a funny little walk.
Yeah.
I've never read it, obviously, but you've told me a few times. I always enjoyed the description.
Little things.
I'm picturing a moustache, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, he's got a funny little... My moustaches.
Uh-huh.
That he goes with. Yeah, balding.
Yep.
A little bit chubby, which is funny because when David Suchet first played the role, he is perfect for it because he does have the egg-shaped head.
Mm.
Fantastic voice. Love the impression of the Belgian accent. But when he first played it, he had to wear a bit of padding. But then over the time, 24 years later, as he'd gotten older himself, he no longer had to wear the padding.
He grew into the role.
Yeah, he grew into the role, absolutely. Because he would have been like 40 when he started and he was nearly, 65 by the time he finished.
And did he tell this story at the show you went and saw him in?
Yeah, so at the start of the year, he did a tour, like a David Suchet in conversation, which was very, very cool. And he talked about, he's played a bunch of different roles, but Poirot was definitely his most famous one.
Yeah,
executive decision. He was. Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He was like the bad guy?
A terrorist and executive decision with John Leguizamo and Steven Seagal.
I think he might have been in Harry and the Hendersons or something like that.
Yes, he was. You told me. I actually haven't seen it, but he was definitely in that.
Yeah, so
I haven't seen that either.
He's played a few roles.
Yeah.
I'm Googling him.
He had to, there's another thing Dave told me, that he, to master the weird Poirot walk, when he was, in the early episodes, he would walk with a coin between his butt cheeks.
Yeah, well, that's how he mastered the walk. He thought, if I can walk from one side of the room with the coin in my butt without falling down, then I am uptight enough for the way this man moves.
I see, okay.
And then that became sort of his gait.
Yeah,
and then in the live show, he talked about how he developed the voice.
Ah.
And it was incredible to watch.
I regret not going to that show.
It was just cool to watch because he would just start out here and you're like, oh, that's it. And then you go, no, this isn't quite it. It's a little bit higher. You go, oh, that's it. And it just kept getting higher and higher and higher. And then suddenly he was just this amazing voice. And you're like, oh, yeah, that really is very different to yours. Because he's got a beautiful he's a Shakespearean actor by training.
Uh-huh,
right. So, yeah. He can do it all.
He is the Poirot. Like, when I picture Poirot, that's what
that's
I picture.
That's the guy.
He's the classic.
He's the quintessential. Yeah. A lot of people have played him over the years, but he's like the one.
Yeah.
Was the mustache real or a stick-on when he played him?
Stick-on, yeah. Sorry to say.
That's a bummer. That would be the number one question he gets asked.
Yeah, is that real? Very good time. So Poirot's there at the mansion. He's talking to Mrs. Lacey, and she explains who is going to be there at the Christmas. There's three teenagers, their grandson Colin and his friend Michael, and then niece Bridget, who's all about the same age as them. So there's three teenagers, Colin, Michael, and Bridget, mm-hmm. and they all hang out together and muck around. There is a cousin, Diana, and her family friend named David Welwyn, who I don't really talk about too much because I didn't want to confuse you with too many names. And then finally, their other granddaughter, Sarah, who they raised after her father died. Ooh. So she's basically like their daughter. Now, the Lacey grandparents are a bit worried about Sarah because she's moved to London and has been living a strange and unusual lifestyle that they're not used to.
Like a normal person life, yeah. Probably.
Well, this is how she describes her granddaughter. Quote, Sarah has got in with what they call the coffee bar set. She won't go to dances or come out properly or be a Deb or anything of that kind. Instead, she has two rather unpleasant rooms in Chelsea, down by the river, and wears these funny clothes that they like to wear, and black stockings or bright green ones, very thick stockings, so prickly, I always think. And she goes about without washing or combing her hair.
Jeez.
What is this? This is the 60s, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, right.
So a bit of a bohemian 60s lifestyle, and they're like, what is this rebel yeah. doing? Because they're very old school.
Yeah, right.
That would be like, that feels like a decade where things leapt forward a little bit.
Yeah, and they're very much, you know, the old English manor style.
Yeah, they'd only ever seen the world in black and white TV. All of a sudden, it's Technicolor.
So far, there's no reason to think any of these people might be the people that stole the ruby.
Might be dodgy, maybe.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, because these mansions do cost a lot to run.
That's true.
That's right.
So even if they look rich, potentially it's all a facade and they need a
yes,
ruby.
Often, Casey, you'll go there and it turns out that they're living in like one wing of the mansion because the rest of it's falling down around them because, you yeah. know, something that's 600 years old, it definitely needs an update to keep it waterproof and things yeah. like that.
And they can't afford to power the whole thing, so yeah. they turn off the electricity.
And luckily they can afford the heating bill.
Yeah, that's right. But in the old days...
Or unluckily, because that means Poirot's there. Yeah. If only they turned off their heating, yeah. maybe he wouldn't have been swayed to come
surely,
along.
Surely, yeah, you'd look up this guy. If one of you is the criminal, then surely you're like, oh, there's always
a
cockiness
as well. You
look up
people. How do you look up someone? Yeah. Where do you look at the Googling
Encyclopedia Britannica. He'd have an entry. But I think you'd ask around, and they're introducing yeah. him as a world-famous detective. Like, he is world-famous. You probably don't even have to look him up. Just ask. And then, so somebody, potentially one of these people, is a criminal going, shit.
Yes.
shit. And you'd think, Evan, that if you turned up and you had planned a murder, you'd be like, I'm going to postpone my plans. But often, they go through with it anyway.
They're like, we've come too far.
Yeah.
Sunk cost.
They get arrogant.
But are they planning it? Or, you know, maybe it's just a crime of passion. Maybe it's just something that happens.
This is true.
Nobody wants to get in and murder somebody. It's just, they don't have any other option, right?
Is it always a murder? Because I was thinking maybe this was just a ruby recovery.
I thought this was just about pudding.
Yeah, the pudding is coming. Don't you worry, Evan. Don't worry, we'll get you some pudding.
You like pudding, Ev?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every Christmas, we have my nana's recipe for Christmas pudding.
Yeah, right.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's great. But it has suet in it, so not suitable for vegetarians. It's like an animal fat that's
suet.
Difficult to get, but it's just part of the classic, like, decades-old recipe.
Right. And do you serve it with a custard or a cream or anything like that?
Yeah, custard, cream, ice cream, any of those.
I'll just take custard and ice cream, thanks. Often those puddings, I don't know, am I picturing the right ones? The ones that are in a sack and they're just like full of raisins.
Oh, there's a sack.
Yeah.
There's a sack. You punch the sack, you got to beat up the sack. Yeah, that's part of the process.
I mean, this is one of the most unpleasant foods. Fruitcake's the same, basically the
same
stuff.
Yeah, I don't like fruitcake, and I even just like Christmas pudding generally I don't like, but my nana's recipe, right. It's the classic recipe.
Tastes like home.
It's, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. It's a nostalgic thing, and it's, yeah, I really like it. So
yeah, I'm sure.
So I'm keen to hear about this pudding.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
We're going to get to the pudding.
Dave, can we go to the pudding?
Because this is like a Christmas Eve type thing, but the Christmas Day, we're getting to Christmas Day.
Okay.
It is a very Christmassy episode.
We're getting
ahead
of ourselves.
You're making up for last year's schmozzle.
Yeah, 12th night. These days, people put it on every year. Sort of, it's an annual Shakespeare in the Park type thing during Christmas. But yeah, back in the day, I was reading that they didn't, you know, they didn't necessarily tie it to Christmas as much. So Sarah, she's wearing stockings. Can you believe this?
Christmas stockings.
Yes, prickly ones.
Well, I mean, it is cold, right?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You got to keep warm. prickly stockings.
But it's so funny that stockings are seen as being this wild rebel. New age thing.
What are you doing?
Stockings. Classy people didn't wear stockings.
Well, not ones like she's wearing, these green ones.
Green.
Prickly ones.
Yeah. They'd wear a mauve or not at all.
Yeah, that's right. But to make matters worse, guys, she's been seeing a man that they do not like. A man named Desmond Lee Wortley.
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 Ugh.
He has been, he has a bad reputation for living off wealthy girls who fawn over him. And in 1 year, Sarah is set to inherit her dead mother's money, and it is a large fortune.
Okay.
She's 20 now, she's going to inherit it at 21.
Okay.
And he's hanging around. And it seems that them telling Sarah that he's no good for her has only furthered her infatuation with the rebel.
Yeah, that tends to happen, right?
Damn it. When it was organised for Poirot to visit them, they were told that Poirot might also be able to look into Desmond Lee Wortley a bit too. Use his little grey cells, as he calls them, to see if Desmond is all right.
Does he say little grey cells in the book?
Not in this one. I was disappointed. So, yeah, they've welcomed him to Christmas, but they're also trying to get something out of the bargain, which is, hey, you're a great detective. Can you work out if he's screwing her over somehow?
Yeah, right.
So Mrs. Lacey knows he's no good, Desmond, but she has been impressed with how he's been treating his sister. She's just gotten out of hospital, so he brought her with him, and she's staying in one of the upstairs bedrooms, because there's so many bedrooms in this place. And he takes all her meals, which Mrs. Lacey sees as very honourable. So she's like, he can't be that bad.
I love a low bar.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but that shows respect for the family.
Yeah, for family values.
Yeah, if he is meant to be, in their mind, they think he's just some low dog, then you'd be like, oh, even this low dog cares for his family.
She does seem to be. Effort. He's all right.
She does seem to be a grandma clutching at straw. I want to like him, so yeah, right. I'll find something. We meet Desmond later when he's one-on-one with Sarah, and he's not very nice. You can tell from the way he's talking to her. He's suspicious of Poirot, this foreign detective. He's like, what the hell's he doing here? And what he's up to. And he's rude about the family's Christmas traditions. Sarah says he wanted to see an old-fashioned English Christmas, I believe. That's how we started calling it Christmas on Do Go On. I'm sure I mispronounced it. Desmond laughed scornfully. Such a lot of tripe, that sort of thing. How he can stand it, I don't know. So he's way too cool for Christmas.
Yeah.
But she's actually quite into it because she gets to hang out with her family.
Yeah, it sounds really nice, Christmas at this
mansion. Yeah, I'd like to go. So that's one plot line. Sarah, Desmond, and the grandparents.
Yep.
The other one concerns our three teenagers, Colin, Michael, and Bridget. Whilst walking back from the lake on Christmas Eve, they discuss Poirot and his appearance. I don't see... You know, said Michael thoughtfully, how Monsieur Poirot ever could have been a detective. I don't see how he'd ever be able to disguise himself. I know, said Bridget. And one can't imagine him running about with a microscope and looking for clues or measuring footprints.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. But they're looking at him going,
he's no Sherlock Holmes.
He's this older, very distinct-looking man. He couldn't go undercover. So they decide that they'd like to make him feel at home by putting on a bit of a show for him. They're going to fake a murder.
Oh.
You know, normal teenage kid stuff.
That's a bit of fun. Oh, that's nice.
The plan is Bridget will lie down in the snow and pretend to be dead with a dagger left nearby, and they'll leave some fake footprints in the snow so there's a suspect.
Uh-huh.
Then they'll leave a trail away from it, and they'll even have some fake blood to add to the drama.
Wow.
They wonder if Poirot will be annoyed by the prank. Oh, I shouldn't think so, said Bridget with facile optimism. I'm sure he'll understand that we've just done it to entertain him. A sort of Christmas treat.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine.
I love that Em's on board with this fake murder.
I'm on board for the fake murder.
Good on you, Ev.
That's harmless fun.
Yeah. What could the consequences be?
What could possibly go wrong?
Great question. Well, they do decide to do it on boxing.
He starts doing an autopsy.
She's so
no
committed.
No time to wait. Scalpel. No. Oh,
in the snow.
Some oxygen still leaving the body.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. Yeah, sometimes they scream. Don't worry about that. She's hit me in the head. God, I've never seen it like this, but don't worry. That'll soon go.
I've never completed an autopsy where they're still kicking and screaming.
But I'm not giving up now. They decide they'll do the prank on Boxing Day rather than Christmas Day, as the old colonel and the head of the house takes Christmas Day pretty seriously, like I said. He'll be offended if they hijack it for a bit of a show. That night, Hercule Poirot enters his bedroom and he notices an envelope lying on his pillow. He opens it and finds a piece of paper with a shakily printed message in capital letters saying, "Don't eat none of the plum pudding. One as wishes you well."
Mm. Right. So the pudding is poisoned.
Maybe.
It would seem. Someone wants him to think, at least.
Or someone wants more pudding for themselves.
They put it on every pillow in the house.
Just go on, don't eat the pudding.
In the end, you're like, oh, you're not going to eat that? No, send it over here. Don't eat none of the cream either. So don't eat none of the plum pudding. One as wishes you well. Hercule Poirot stares at it. His eyebrows rise. Cryptic, he murmured. And most unexpected.
Yeah. Mm. See, yeah, that's interesting because someone knows that the pudding is poisoned.
Who's in on it?
Which means, but then I wonder who they're telling not to eat. Are they the one that poisoned it?
Is it like a couple of people have done the poison and one of them's like, I don't actually want to kill Poirot.
Not Poirot.
Yeah, I wonder if Poirot's the target or if someone else is the target and they just don't want him to get friendly fire. Or...
So that's not a good use of friendly fire, is it?
No.
Collateral damage.
Yeah.
Friendly fire with poison.
And why, who has any reason to protect him? Like, no one else has a connection to him, you know?
That's right.
He's a stranger to them, right?
But the thing is, as a famous person, any of them could be a fan from afar. He has fan mail sometimes. He has people who love him, so maybe.
I guess they do. They're wanting him to get to the bottom of this. This Desmond guy, right? So they do have a use for him. They don't. Potentially,
that's
they don't. You know. If...
But then, who's openly talking about killing him? Why would anyone? That's confusing.
Well, they're not openly. You mean?
Well, they're open enough to be telling someone who's trying to protect him.
What?
Who's written the thing?
They must. They must know or have heard something. Like how
the person that wrote the note.
Yeah. How do they know?
Yeah. 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 Okay.
Yeah. Where have they? Is it a rumor? Are they in on it? And like Matt said, they're getting cold feet.
Yeah. I think they must be in on it, right?
That feels.
I don't know.
I know. Well,
we don't have all the information. I think we're going to have to keep going.
That's why Agatha Christie is the best. Hey, Book Cheaters, just Dave here, dropping in to tell you that this week's episode of Book Cheat is brought to you by Audible. Audible, of course, being the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks. If you're on the Audible website or on the Audible app, have a look because they've got everything. Bestsellers, memoirs, news, business, self-development, of course, classic literature, it's covered. And the way it works is if you're an Audible member like I am, you get a credit every month to pick any title, plus you get 2 Audible originals as well. And basically, you can listen anywhere you're listening to this podcast. And this month, I use my credit, would you believe, to get The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding by Agatha Christie. That's right. The book that I'm talking about, I listened to on Audible, and it is read by Hugh Fraser, who some of you Poirot heads might know as the actor that plays Captain Arthur Hastings on the TV show. He's got such a great English voice. I love it. He does the accents for the different characters. Not quite as good as a Belgian accent as David Suchet, but very passable. And I enjoyed it a lot. It's a lot of fun hearing it. And if you get that one, you get The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding, but also comes with 4 or 5 other Agatha Christie stories. So that will definitely keep you going the whole month. So that's my tip for you. If you'd like to go get started with Audible, you can go to audible.com/bookcheat or text bookcheat to 500-500. One more time, go to audible.com/bookcheat or text bookcheat to 500-500. And this week's episode of Book Cheat is also brought to you by Acorn TV, which is a commercial-free streaming service that's rooted in British television. Home to sophisticated and artful storytelling with top-rated mysteries, addicting dramas, heartfelt comedies, and so much more. I am a big, big fan of Acorn TV, and Poirot is on there. And there are so many Poirot mysteries for you to sink your teeth into, including this week's topic, which was adapted under the title of The Theft of the Royal Ruby. So if you'd like to watch this mystery, jump on to Acorn TV, and there are so many of my favourites are available on there. Murder in Mesopotamia, Cards on the Table, Death on the Nile, one of the best all-time episodes. And there's so many other great TV shows on there. So if you'd like to escape to Britain and beyond without leaving your seat, Try Acorn TV free for 30 days by going to acorn.tv and then use my promo code BOOKCHEAT. That's Acorn, OCORN.TV. And using the code BOOKCHEAT, you'll get your first 30 days for free.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The next day, Christmas lunch takes place at 2 p.m. They have a feast including two turkeys.
Wow.
Between, I think it is something, there's only about 10 characters there, so they eat a lot of turkey. Then the plum pudding is brought in.
Ooh.
And Poirot stares at the piece on his plate for a long, long time, remembering the note that advised him to avoid it. He is baffled. A rare feeling for this detective. His piece, as far as he can see, is identical to everyone else's. What could have possibly happened to it, he wonders.
Yeah, right. Mm.
He eventually, because everyone starts eating and says, oh, you want some sauce for it? He goes, yep. Eventually, he has a mouthful.
Oh.
Because of, like, just pressure to be
normal. Everyone's eating. He's like, oh, it's delicious. And he kept eating because it was so good.
Oh, no.
Poirot is meant to be so smart.
We then found something in the pudding, which isn't that strange because Christmas puddings traditionally often have coins like sixpences.
Yes,
and
we did that. My nana's pudding, yeah, would normally have like a 10 cent or a 20 cent piece
yeah,
or something in
bake
it.
Into it. And like if you find it, it's good luck or it's going to be a prosperous year or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but really you've just had a thing that's been in everyone's pocket.
That's right. You want to boil that down before you put it in.
A toddler probably shat it out at some point.
Yeah, I don't know if my family ever disinfected the coins before putting them in the pudding.
Best case scenario, you're eating a thing with disinfectant on it.
Yeah.
You know, in itself, isn't that nice?
Well, like, when my family used to do it years ago, my grandfather would put sixpences in, like actual proper old coins. And then I later found out, you know, still as a kid, I'd be like, I found out that they're quite rare and valuable. You better believe that made me even more keen to try and find it. I want to get this thing and sell it.
What's the guy? So the winner got to keep it, or do you just hand it back and they do it again next year?
I, as a kid, thought you got to keep it, but I'm pretty sure, you know, there's not many around, so you gave it back to Grandpa for next year. So he eats it, and he found something in his pudding. He finds what they call the bachelor's button, meaning that he's going to be a bachelor. Something that he says he's been for many years anyway, and he doesn't think that'll change anytime soon.
It's an accurate pudding.
Maybe, yeah.
Pudding prediction.
And then people around the table erupt as they find other items. There's a ring, meaning you could get married. A thimble, meaning Bridget will be an old maid. They tell her, oh, you're going to be an old maid.
What a fun tradition.
Yeah. For this teenage girl to be bullied by the others. Then the old colonel yells, why the hell did someone put glass in my pudding?
Oh.
I could have swallowed it. Ooh. It could have killed me, or it could have given me appendicitis, he says. And I think, I don't know that if that's how that works. But God bless my soul, he ejaculated. It's a
what?
Red... No, there's two he ejaculated in this.
Conan Scott Doyle, is that his name?
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Conan Scott Doyle.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a good name,
though,
Conan Scott.
Arthur Conan Doyle ejaculates all the time. It's like it happens so often. And the way Stephen Fry says
he's ejaculating all over the place.
I've had the thought of doing a supercut of every time Stephen Fry says he ejaculated.
Does he say it knowingly?
Like,
does
it feels like he must. It comes out like, yeah, like he knows what he's saying. But
that is fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
So it was obviously just used more as an old Tommy.
Yeah,
phrase.
For sure. But now people are reading it.
Jesus,
he knows.
Usurped it a bit.
Yeah. He ejaculated, God bless my soul. I could have swallowed it. Poirot examines the glass to see that it is red in colour.
Oh, hang on.
Almost like a ruby.
Whoa.
Wait, almost or exactly like a ruby?
He looks at it, it's like almost like a ruby is what the text says. The conversation moves on as other things are found in the pudding. Because people are like, oh, I found this. I found this. And then Poirot quietly pockets the red bit of glass.
Doesn't this really has the vibe of that one was meant for Poirot where the note was referring to?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Maybe. Because...
Or maybe everyone did get that note because someone...
No, everyone ate it though.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, surely not everyone would just ignore a note from a stranger.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all anonymous.
Ominous note.
Yeah.
They're all eating it out of peer pressure, but everyone's feeling the same thing, like, oh, I don't want to eat this.
Yeah. Oh. They're all just going, well, if I die like this, at least it won't be of embarrassment.
Yeah, that's right. And then the first person cracked and it's like, oh, God, we have to eat it now.
And then they all just die.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, but it does feel like, yeah, I don't know. There's something about it that makes it feel like... Poirot's note feels like it should be lined up with the ruby.
Yeah, well, that's the only dangerous thing that.
Or
that
they just
the only
didn't want him to feel like a bachelor.
Yeah. Don't eat the pudding, mate. You get the bachelor, and it'll be very embarrassing for you. After lunch, Poirot goes into the kitchen. He says you'd like to congratulate the cook, Mrs. Ross, on the fantastic lunch.
Oh, that's nice.
He asks her about the pudding, and she's very happy to be complimented by it. Although the best puddings are made weeks before they're eaten, she says, this one was only made 3 days ago.
Hmm.
Mrs. Lacey, the head of the household, had ordered one from a store to save Mrs. Ross time, but she insisted, no, I've got to make a homemade one, so I'll make one with, even though it's only 3 days' notice.
Yeah, right.
And she insisted, even though they only had the short notice, on keeping the tradition of everyone in the family coming into the kitchen to take it in turns to stir the pudding mixture.
Oh, so like everyone had the opportunity to slip something in.
Yeah, so that's a
great setup.
Yeah, so because apparently it is a good luck thing. You stir the pudding.
Yeah.
Everyone has a go.
Yeah, right.
So
in my family, we punch the pudding's in a bag and we each punch the pudding.
That's because
more violent, I suppose.
Evan grew up in Frankston, which is, things are a little different down there.
Yeah, everyone has a side swipe at
the pudding.
Yeah. There's mixture everywhere.
It was the main streets of Frankston in the 80s and 90s. It wasn't the beautiful beachside suburb it is there.
No, it's quite nice now, yeah. I don't think we could afford a house. Like
I drove through it on the way back from a peninsula trip last week, and I was just like, it's wild, Frankston, how it's changed.
But it's a town of two sides, right? Like I think Frankston, this is going back a while now, but Frankston was the municipality with the greatest difference between the most expensive houses and the cheapest houses.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Even then?
The biggest...
That's the classic wrong side of the tracks kind of suburb.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there's tracks and it is...
Which side were you on?
Well, we were Frankston South, which is... Or like Mount Eliza is where I grew up.
Yeah.
So we were like the more affluent.
Oh, no. I really wanted to have a friend from the wrong side of the track.
Sorry. You were hoping for a battler.
Sorry. No, we lived down sort of near the beach in Mount Eliza.
Because I kind of grew up in a more moderate version of that. I was on the wrong side of the Nepean Highway.
Right.
The Great Divide.
The Moorabbin side. The other side was East Brighton. You go further Brighton, which is like...
very famously pretty, affluent, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. They were different suburbs, I guess. It's the classic thing where there's a train track. I think The Simpsons use it sometimes, where it's like the weather changes when you cross the side. One side's sunny, the other one's stormy.
Like they can somehow control the weather. I love it. So they all stirred the pudding mixture, and everyone had a crack, like you said, Evan. This is a quote from the book. The young gentleman, Miss Bridget, and the London gentleman who's staying here, and his sister, and Mr. David, and Miss Diana, Mrs. Middleton, I should say, all had a stir, they did.
Jeez.
So they all went through and had a go. So they've all had access to this pudding, like you were saying.
This would have been a COVID nightmare.
Oh, no. It's BYO spoon these days. She also tells Poirot that she made four puddings, two larger ones and two smaller ones. The smaller ones were for Mr. and Mrs. Lacey after everyone's left. Sort of in the January period that they can enjoy at their own leisure.
That's because nice.
So they would be the ones that taste the best.
Because they're going to be there for weeks, yeah.
It's like a bottle of wine sort of thing.
Mm.
You want it to really settle or whatever wine does.
Yeah.
Age.
Ferment, no.
Yeah, ferment. I think the fermenting's done already.
Yeah.
I assume that happened earlier.
So did you say there's four?
Yeah, there's two smaller ones and two larger ones, one for Christmas Day and then one for New Year's Day. But you never believe this. There was an accident on Christmas morning and the Christmas pudding smashed. So Mrs. Ross had to use the New Year's Day pudding instead and hope that no one would notice.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's no difference between them.
Apart from
well,
maybe the bits and pieces inside them.
Yeah, I know. The difference is there's a mold with like a Christmas wreath
on top
of it.
Also, they do look different.
Yeah, they look different, yeah, but right. You know, they taste the same. But then you're right. They've got different things in
but
them.
But then also, I didn't consider this. How do they cut it up so each piece has one of the things in them?
I think there's just so many different bits right. in there. Yeah,
luck
just,
of the draw.
Yeah, luck right. of the draw. Some right. people might not get anything, and yeah. other people might. Imagine you got everything. I'm going to be a maid. I'm going to be a bachelor. I've got the ring. I'm getting married. That's a roller coaster.
Is it a coincidence that it was gender appropriate that Poirot got and Sarah got?
Yeah, I think that is just a coincidence.
Right. So some years Poirot might get the
he's the old maid. Maid,
and that's they'll go. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, yeah. They might laugh at that and go. That's not the right thing for you.
That'd be funny.
The final comment she makes is about Desmond Lee Wortley, the bad boy that is dating Mrs. Lacey's granddaughter. She says, quote, "It's sad that his sister is so poorly. Had an operation she had. She seemed all right the first day she was here, but that very day, after we'd been stirring the puddings, she was took bad again, and she's been in bed ever since. Got up too soon after her operation, I expect. Doctors nowadays, they have you out of hospital before you can hardly stand on your feet. Why, my very own nephew's wife, ... and this is still from the book. And Mrs. Ross went into a long and spirited tale of hospital treatment as accorded to her relations, comparing it unfavourably with the consideration that had been lavished upon them in older times. I love that because it implies the story was so boring that Agatha Christie couldn't even be bothered to write it down. It's kind of like, insert an old waffling story yeah. here.
You get the gist.
Yeah.
Just imagine. Yada.
Yeah, like she keeps talking. We just get into Poirot's mind. He starts thinking about something else. He's not listening, just nodding.
That's the scene from The Simpsons where Flanders is talking about cider. Yeah. If it's tangin' brown, you're in cider town.
Clear and brown. You got you. What is it? Tangin' brown. Clear and yellow. Yellow. You got juice there, fella. Tangin' brown. You're in cider town.
So was it's Desmond's sister? Is yes. this what we're talking about? So she hasn't been sort of heard from...
No, she's so sick that she's bedridden.
Yeah, right. That's could be suspicious.
Maybe.
Oh, and he's always taking meals up. Oh, wait, why is that suspicious?
I don't know. I'm just
like if she's
it's...
dead and he's going in there to
she's
slowly embalm
seconds.
Her or something.
Oh,
oh,
that,
no, oh he's having seconds, yeah.
He's the one that wanted more pudding.
Oh, especially if he knew the ruby was in there. He's like, oh, I'll take more servings of pudding up to my definitely real sister.
I'll take 10 servings of pudding. He brings it back down. She didn't like those ones. Can I have this one?
It just looks like you've sort of put your hand through it, picked out the little thimble. Thimble.
So that night, which is still Christmas night, Poirot goes to bed. Well, he gets into bed, but he doesn't sleep. He just lies there for 2 hours,
that's
waiting.
Suspicious.
Waiting.
Okay.
And eventually his patience is rewarded as someone sneaks quietly into his room.
Whoa.
Oh, he knew. He was waiting.
Yes, he decided to do this after our bad boy, Desmond Lee Wortley, handed him a cup of coffee that night, which Poirot was suspicious of, so he slipped it to another guest, David, who is a bit highly strung, so Poirot doesn't feel guilty about him sleeping a bit more soundly than usual.
Oh, he knew. Oh, he thought, he was sus on it, and
he thought, why is this, you know, usually rough man insisting that I have this coffee? That's a bit weird.
Coffee feels like the worst thing to put sleeping pills in.
Yeah,
well. It cans itself, and so you just feel completely normal.
Yeah, that's interesting. So he knew the coffee was...
He thought I
was assuming it was poison, and he just passed it off. But don't worry, he's highly strung, so I don't care if he dies.
Yeah, that's right. He's a real ball, this guy. So Poirot, he had a hunch. He thought, that's a bit weird. I'll go to bed tonight, and I'll see if anything weird happens. And it does. Desmond sneaks into his room as Poirot is asleep, or pretending to be asleep. Mm-hmm. And he searches his room, but Desmond clearly can't find anything. First he's in the drawers, then he's in the bedside table.
Did he see him getting that red glass, maybe?
Yeah, because Poirot's thinking that everyone else got distracted, but if you were a ruby thief, you'd keep your eye on what's happening to it. And Poirot just quietly put it in his pocket.
Is this supposed to be the whole ruby, or is this like a shard of ruby?
No, this is it's big. It's
the whole
very big,
thing,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
And it's very valuable, yeah.
Yeah.
And what? So why? So we're thinking he might have been the guy who stole the ruby, then how did it end up in the pudding?
That's a good question.
That's just a mystery. You'll
I'm
never
afraid
know.
The story ends there.
Go.
So, Poirot pretends to be asleep. Desmond searches his room. He's in the drawers, in the cupboard, searching the bedside table. Eventually, he gives up. And after Desmond leaves, Poirot says to himself, "You have a disappointment. Yes, yes, a serious disappointment. Bah! To imagine even that Hercule Poirot would hide something where you could find it." So he has hidden it, but he's like, "Mate, you're going to have to get up pretty early if you're going to find my hiding spot."
It's in his butt, definitely in his butt.
Imagine, he has to pretend to be asleep while he's being examined.
So in the TV adaptation, it wasn't a coin between his butt cheeks after all.
The entire red ruby.
So Poirot is there to get the ruby. Mm. He happens upon the ruby.
Yes, so
end
easily.
Of case closed, end of story. But he's still there. Like, he's still hanging around,
yeah,
right?
And
like,
is the prince that he's working for at this thing as well?
No, the prince isn't there.
So the prince just knew for whatever reason the ruby was going to be somewhere at this party.
Yeah, I think they had
so they knew that someone there was
the had a bit of a hunch, so that's why they've sent Poirot over there to investigate.
Yeah, right.
This is pretty high. What am I trying to say here? Convoluted. I was going to say highfalutin, and it took my brain a while to get back around to convoluted.
It is a bit convoluted. But yeah, Poirot, he's there to get the ruby. He has
the
ruby.
He's got
right?
the ruby back
but
now.
But he wants to get to the bottom of
now he's a bit
who's
like, yeah,
suspicious. What's
who's,
going on
who's
here?
Who? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Who is this guy? And Poirot was awoken the next morning by Colin and Michael, two of the teenagers, who seemed upset and told him to come quickly.
Oh,
this is Boxing Day morning.
Murder.
Oh, this will be fun.
So Poirot puts on his coat over his pajamas and follows them outside. The two teenage boys tell him that Bridget is outside in the snow and not moving. There's blood and they think that someone might have killed her. The boys are both snickering to themselves as Poirot sort of approaches the body, like, "We got him good."
Oh, that would not look good initially to Poirot.
If you're laughing.
No.
At that moment, Desmond Lee Wortley, the bad boy that searched Poirot's room last night, appeared and was shocked to see the girl lying on the ground. He asks, is she okay and if she's been murdered? Because it looks that way. There's blood. There's a dagger there.
Yeah.
And Poirot confirms that, yeah, it looks that way. Meanwhile, the teenage boys start chatting to each other quietly. "Good old Bridget," whispered Colin. "Isn't she wonderful? Not a twitch."
Oh, no.
"I've never seen anything look so dead as Bridget does."
Oh, no.
Whispered Michael.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Poirot interrupts them and says, "They must go to the police at once." Michael obviously decides the prank has gone far enough and says, "All right, I think the jig's up now."
No.
He stepped forward. For the first time, he seemed a little unsure of himself. "I'm awfully sorry," he said. I hope you don't mind too much. It was sort of a joke for Christmas and all that. You know, we thought we'd, well, lay on a murder for you." Poirot is confused to hear this. He asks if they're playing an April Fool on him. And he says, "If that's the case, why does Bridget not get up?" The boys start telling her, "All right, get up now." But she doesn't. Then they start to panic a little bit. Poirot gets Desmond Lee Wortley to come over and check her pulse. She hasn't got one. Because she's dead.
Oh, no.
Poirot says, "Someone has turned the comedy into a tragedy."
Oh, Poirot, it's not the time for a quip, mate. Their sister's just died.
Yeah.
Then he adds, "There's a set of footprints going and returning. A set of footprints that bears a strong resemblance to the footprints you have just made, Mr. Lee Wortley, coming from the path to this spot." So there's footprints next to the body, and then Wortley's just walked over to do the pulse, and he goes, "Oh, they're the same footprints." That's weird.
Right. I would have thought the brother's footprints would be there. You'd think they would have helped with the blood and stuff.
Yeah, like the placed ones. The fake ones.
Yeah. Well, they had fake ones, but then also they've covered up their own footprints to try and frame someone, but then maybe something's happened. Desmond asks what Poirot is accusing him of, and Poirot says, "Well, let's see." Poirot bends down and examines Bridget's lifeless but curled up hand and is clutching something. Poirot grabs it out. Desmond Lee Wortley says, "It's the damn thing out of the pudding."
What, the ruby?
Yes.
What?
Desmond then reaches down and grabs the ruby out of Bridget's hand and says that evidence like this might go missing and that he'll go inside and telephone the police.
What?
As he rushes off, his girlfriend, Sarah, arrives on the scene, and as she's getting up to speed with the story, they're explaining that what's happened, they hear a car screeching as it takes off down the driveway. It's Desmond.
And he's got the ruby.
And he's done a runner.
So, wow. Wait. So Poirot either hid the ruby with that girl, or she came in after he stayed awake and that other guy left, and then she came in and took it?
Maybe.
I don't know how she
wound up. How did it end up in her hand?
Yeah, that's weird.
And how quick, like, those kids would have set up the murder scene, left, and then she would have been murdered instantly. And then they didn't even take the ruby if someone was killing her for the ruby.
Yeah, this is very weird.
Well, so he's driven off. Apparently, he told everyone inside, I've got to call the police, but the phone's dead, so I'll go tell them in person. And then he took off really quickly in the car. As the whole house is now standing over Bridget's body in complete shock, Poirot decides to take them inside and explain everything to them.
Oh, so he's got it all worked out?
Love this part. Often at the end of an Agatha Christie, he sits everyone down.
We're up to the end?
And
the,
yeah, yeah.
What?
And the camera pans from person to person, and you're like, is it her? Is it him? It's him! He was wearing the wig, you know?
Yeah right.
So he explains about the prince and the ruby and why he was at the house and at Christmas in the first place. The prince had the jewel stolen, and the lady who took it had Delilah for a while. It was arranged that she could come to King's Lacey, the mansion they're in now, under the guise of being the sister of a clever gentleman who would also be staying there.
She's the sick sister.
Girl upstairs.
Yeah, right.
She says that she's just out of hospital, but is feeling a lot better when she arrives. But then she hears that Hercule Poirot is also coming to stay.
Oh, I'm a bit sick again.
Yeah. So she hides the ruby in the first place she can think of as she's being told the news.
A dead girl's hand.
Yeah. Well, in the pudding mixture.
Oh, no.
Because that's when she finds out. They're all talking about Poirot's. Oh, Poirot's coming. And she's like, oh, my God. So she hides it. And
that's
then,
not a good spot at
no,
all.
No.
And then she pretends to be bedridden in case Poirot has been shown a photo of
it's
her.
It's a mansion. There couldn't be, like, how many places could you hide something?
In a plant.
In a plant, like, under a roof tile.
Well, she hid the ruby in the mixture of the New Year's Day pudding. Remember, there's four puddings.
Yeah, okay.
Hoping to grab it after Christmas when Poirot had left. Right. He'll leave on Boxing Day or the 27th. I'll grab that pudding and then I'll take it away. But as fate would have it...
Oh, my head was thinking New Year's Day was the day after Christmas. Yeah.
No, you got a whole week. For Poirot to leave, be like, bah, I guess I didn't find that ruby. And the Christmas Day pudding, as fate would have it, was ruined. And the New Year's Day pudding had to be eaten. And that's when it turned up in the Colonel's slice of the pudding. And obviously Desmond probably saw that and went, oh, my God. He then, this is Poirot.
Wait, and then this note, right? So, one of that couple has to have written a note, but why? No, that doesn't make any sense for them to have written it, does it? Unless
they don't want him to eat and they don't know yet
that it's gonna be the New Year's Day pudding.
Yeah,
they still think it's gonna be in the kitchen for another six days or so.
So I don't know why they would write that. It's got nothing to do with them at that point. So it's this is gonna be a B plot thing somehow.
Yeah, we'll get to the note.
All right,
Poirot. He's explained all this, and then he gets the family to look out the window at Bridget's body. But it's gone. That's right. She was only pretending to be dead.
What?
Poirot pranked the pranksters and Desmond Lee Wortley.
Wow.
He heard about that he was going to be an April Fool. He took Bridget aside and said, I actually need you to pretend to be dead longer.
How did she do it so... she was only convincing him who...
Yeah, and also she was wearing something on underneath her dress that blocked her pulse from being able to be felt.
Oh, that's why he asked Desmond to check her pulse
and he was like,
she was dead.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why doesn't Poirot just go check her pulse? Why is he asking someone else to go to
and
that?
Poirot,
so he could find the ruby.
Yeah, right.
And Poirot also made it look like that Wortley... might be a suspect in the murder because of the footprints.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're like a big jewel thief, you don't want police coming and investigating you at all. Even if you're innocent of the murder, you don't want them sniffing around.
Yeah,
so he grabbed the ruby and said, I'm going to the cops, but really he drove away with it.
Yeah.
What? That's a great ruse. but surely, I mean, I was going to say, surely Poirot didn't put the real ruby there, but he wouldn't have had time to get a fake made up.
That's a good point you make there. Someone says to him, do you mean that you just let the guy get away with the ruby? Well, the ruby he grabbed was a fake.
Oh. What?
The prince had given Poirot a fake in case he needed to swap it.
Oh, they hadn't said.
So he had a double that looked very convincing.
Did they tell you that earlier, or are you like, oh, okay, all of a sudden there's a fake?
It's that you didn't know. Yeah, you didn't know. Poirot had been told he can't go to the police. Remember, he's not allowed to go to the police.
Yeah.
Because it would embarrass the prince. So that's why he let Wortley get away, but he's let him get away with a fake ruby. So when he tries to sell it to, you know, dodgy jewel thieves, you know.
He's in trouble.
He's in trouble with them. So he's going to get a bit of justice, And as for the pretend sister upstairs, well, she appears at the door and is furious that Desmond is left without her. And she starts,
I reckon she would be.
She starts cursing him, being like, he said he'd give me 50% of the profits. I never should have trusted a crook.
So that's, why would she have done that? Why wouldn't she have...
Just run away.
Run away or still, like, maintain the story? Because she's just owning up when she didn't have to.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Poirot says, I've already ordered a car to take you to the station. Because remember, he can't arrest anyone because no one can...
A train station.
Yeah, train station. So she just gets in a taxi and leaves.
Right.
So she gets away with it. The only mystery left for Poirot is, who put the note in his room about not eating the pudding? Well,
I reckon it's that crusty old general or whatever for some reason.
The colonel.
Colonel.
It's that. So he actually asked them. I've got one question for you, actually. Usually I get to solve all the mysteries, but maybe one of you can help me out. Which one of you wrote the note? And they're all confused. It's at this point one of the chef's assistants, Annie Bates, sheepishly comes forward and says, sir, it was me.
Oh, did it, Governor?
I did. Oh, she speaks. Yeah, you can tell she's going to speak like that. She overheard Desmond, the crook, and the girl pretending to be his sister, talking about Poirot and how they have to get rid of him. He then asked her, where did you put it? And she answered, I put it in the pudding.
Oh.
Annie Bates heard that and thought, there's poison in Poirot's pudding. They're going to poison him.
Yeah,
but she also knew that... That there was no Poirot's pudding at that point. She hadn't even cut it up yet, you'd assume. It's not like he had an assigned bit of pudding.
Yeah, no, so but she'd be assuming the whole pudding is poison. Yeah, but she didn't tell anybody else.
But, you know, maybe someone will serve it to him and, like, you know, put a couple of drops of something in
there. But he said, where did you put it? I put it in the pudding.
In the pudding.
Past tense.
Yeah, that's right.
I think we've beaten Christy here.
Well, Poirot does say to her, you've read too many detective story to Annie Bates, which is very, you know, in-joker like that.
Yeah.
He says, but you did mean well. You tried to save my life, even though it actually wasn't under threat. He offers to buy her anything, any gift she would like from London, and she asks for this special vanity box for makeup. And he says, I'll send it to you.
Oh, so she's doing ads in her books now, is she? What a weird little detail to add in.
And as for the final line or final paragraph of the book, this is how it all wraps up. Ah, he said to himself, and now I go. There is nothing more to be done here. A pair of arms slipped around his shoulders unexpectedly. If you will just stand here under the mistletoe, said Bridget, who is, I think, a teenage girl.
Oh, the old maid.
Yeah.
Say, oh no, that was
no, not the old maid. It's the girl that was pretending to be dead in the snow.
Yeah, that's a bit strange.
And then there's an asterisk to indicate a break in the chapter. You know how they have those. Also called, I didn't know this, an asterism or a dinkus. No, three asterisks. That's called a dinkus.
Yeah. Ah.
And then the story ends with Hercule Poirot enjoyed it. He enjoyed it very much. He said to himself that he had a very good Christmas. But it's so soon after the
teenage kiss.
You're like, is
what?
It? I think... Without the asterisks, you'd be like, that's a bit weird. But I think he's thinking about the Christmas experience
overall. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, that is the adventure of the Christmas pudding.
Well done.
So there was a murder, but then it was taken back.
Right.
Yeah, right. So
that was great.
A murder
great
after
twist.
All. No one died.
No one died. And no one really got hurt.
And
the ruby returned to the prince.
And the. Yeah, right, okay. So Poirot had he got the ruby out of the cake, that was the real ruby, he hid it was fine.
And then he got the fake ruby and
Desmond
then
didn't find it, okay, great.
He put the fake ruby in Bridget's hand and Desmond grabbed it, ran away with it, thinking, great, I've got away with it, I got the ruby.
What a happy end of the story. The rich person is still super rich.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Poirot, they didn't lose one of their many precious jewels.
And Poirot probably got paid handsomely.
Yeah.
and the people who were just trying to steal a ruby to, you know, get by.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I know.
But the assistant chef got a...
She got a music box.
That's right. And also the head chef that made the pudding, I should have said earlier, Poirot, after she gave him that information, which she didn't realise, she was giving away all the details of, oh, there were four puddings and we broke one and everyone stirred it. Can you believe that? And then she even name dropped. If you see, it's funny when you go back and read it, the list is blah, 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 Desmond Wortley, his sister, and then it keeps going. But like when you're reading at the time, I wasn't like, oh, his sister was there.
Yeah,
I just thought you gloss over it, but then you think back and... And another part is, I do love reading these and talking about it is a lot of fun, but there are other little red herrings that she puts in there throughout that make you think, oh, that could be something. Like at the start, Mrs. Lacey, the head of the household, talks about how their granddaughter's dating a bad boy. And she's like, even in my day, people, you know, the first boyfriend is never any good. She's like, my first boyfriend, oh, I've gone blank on his name. I can think his last name. But I can't remember his first name. That's odd. And you think, oh, he's got to be not it somehow. Yeah. That never came back. But there's just these little bits that you think that you're trying to, you know, if it was Sherlock Holmes in the 20th century like they're doing, 21st century, I should say, with Benedict Cumberbatch, in my mind there's like all these lists of characters and clues and you're trying to tick things off. But, yeah, but it is cool.
It is Mind Palace.
Yeah, that's right. It all, you know, it always comes together. Sometimes a little bit clunky, but I did enjoy it.
Is it written in such a way that you feel like you could have solved that if you'd studied it, if you'd read it over and over and over, you could have worked out what the outcome was?
And this one is a little bit more in that it's a little bit easier in the fact that about halfway through Poirot, Desmond breaks into his house, into his bedroom, and you go, "Oh, he's got to be the dodgy one."
Yeah.
But often when they do it. They'll just say someone broke in and Poirot couldn't see their face or in the TV show when they do it. Yeah, it's just like someone in a dark costume. And only when he does the reveal at the end, that person just happens to turn to the camera for 1 second and you see their face and their black outfit. That's sort of how they do the reveal. Yeah. But in this one, he was named early on. So, you know, oh, that guy's the crook. But
unless that was a red herring.
Yeah, well, it could have been. He could have been like, oh, actually, I'm a really good guy and I was searching for this thing for... I'd hidden the wedding
Someone
ring.
Someone said they'd poisoned your pillow.
I was gonna ask Sarah to marry me and I'd hidden the ring in this room. I didn't realise you were going to stay here, so I was looking for it.
Right, yeah.
There could be something like that. But this time it was, you know, more straightforward.
Yeah.
I like when those... I'm thinking of at least one episode, but there maybe was another, where it was someone in disguise the whole time turned out to be two characters, including the murderer. That I remember thinking, watching, I'm like, is this bad wardrobe? Because there's something a bit odd about the way this character looks. But in my head, I'm like, is this just like low budget 80s TV? Or is it?
It did turn out it was two people.
And you go, oh.
Yeah, I should have gone with my gut. But, you know, I thought, oh, yeah, they've just done a bad job there. This one's actually been adapted as, it's called The Theft of the Royal Ruby in the TV series in series 3. So you might have seen it, Matt. And they do apparently change some of the characters. I didn't want to rewatch it in case it sort of confused me.
Right.
But I will now. I'm going to rewatch it again now.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I... What season? Season 3.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's coming up.
Perfect. Episode 9. Yeah. I'll be interested to watch it back now to see how close it was.
I've been watching it with a friend's borrowed DVD collection. So it's an effort to get it going because the DVD got to
plug in the DVD.
Yeah, it's the only reason.
How archaic!
But I just saw an ad on daytime TV the other day for a streaming service that looks like it's exclusively Christie.
What?
And it's like $6.99 a month. I'm like, maybe I just subscribe for a couple of months.
Is it called Acorn TV?
It is called Acorn TV.
They are a sponsor of this show.
Oh, really?
Perfect.
They are. Yeah. Really? They honestly are.
Yeah. Maybe I'll use your code then.
And I do have Acorn TV and I've been rewatching them on there.
Oh, great.
A lot of the... Because
there was Miss Marple and also...
Oh, there's so many good ones. Miss Marple. And there's all the, you know, even Broadchurch and more modern. A lot of mysteries are on there.
Why Acorn? Is that a reference to something?
I'm not sure why they're called Acorn TV.
But it is all sort of British mystery stuff.
Well, they've got stuff from all around the world.
Okay.
I'll tell you that. But, but you know, a lot of their, you know, there's Midsummer Murders.
This is starting to sound like one of those dodgily scripted, like life insurance ads where they can't act, but they're sort of, you're going, oh, you know what? I have been thinking about our son and what would happen if we died? Yeah. We really need to get.
You know, you should do one important thing and get real.
Those are the worst ads. Is it on purpose? So are they like that? Is that the idea? Is that they?
Well, you remember it, don't you?
Yeah, that's. Yeah, I guess that's, maybe. It stands out so much that the acting is just so off. And it's the two most awkward two-hander scenarios.
Yeah.
Those ads and award ceremony presenters who come out. Yes. Do this written banter.
It's, yeah, written banter is the worst.
It sucks.
It's hard work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to nail. You nearly never see anyone pull it off. And including, like, legends of the screen.
Unless you're making fun of it. Unless you, unless you.
It's funny, at the Oscars, you have two Oscar winners up there. And you're like, can't I get it right?
Yeah.
Well, that is basically the end of the show. Do you have any thoughts or feelings? Did you feel like it was a satisfying mystery, or was it?
It felt like it came to an abrupt end. It felt
Yeah, it felt like we were getting right to the meat of it, and it was. Yeah. And then this was like, I'll solve it now.
Yeah,
this is a shorter one,
right?
For the Christmas.
There was a couple of bits where it felt like, oh, that just feels like a bit of a leap or something. And I mean, putting a thing to cover her wrist so that her pulse wouldn't show through and stuff like that. Kind of hate those sort of details. And earlier he was given a fake ruby as well. Those sort of things are like,
Yeah, it's always annoying when it's like, and the murderer was a character you haven't met yet.
Yeah.
Christy never does that though, right?
It's like cheating. Mm. Doctor Who was a lot like that. And I feel like the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes is kind of like that too.
Right.
Because they're written in a way that you couldn't possibly, you don't have all the information.
Right.
And so they can, it's like, it's a cheat way to make it seem like it's like cheating good writing. Because you can do a reveal that isn't really a reveal because it's just not.
It was always most satisfying when you go, that's clever.
Yeah, that's clever. Which it felt like it was kind of like that. Like she'd laid out a lot of it, but
you want to feel like you could have put it together.
You could have put it together, but you probably didn't because it's really, really, really clever.
I try, like, part of me, my brain is trying to figure it out, but the other part is like, just shut up and enjoy it.
Yeah, because the other thing is you don't want it to be spelled out enough that you. You don't want to figure it out. Yeah. You want to feel like you could have figured it out if you'd really thought about it.
I think that Agatha Christie actually suffered from a bit of that. When she first started, she was at the forefront. She's like created a lot of these tropes and things like that. And by the time she's, because this is 40 years after, and then the final one came out 15 years after this.
Right.
It's a 50-year gap, and she had to start saying, like people started criticizing, being like, oh, that one was a bit obvious. And she'd be like, well, you know, people have gotten a lot better at working things out. They understand, like, a lot more has been done now, so it's harder to keep surprising people for like five, 6 decades.
You're looking for all the little clues and trying to put it together.
But this one, I mean, are people cracking this code? It feels like it was...
No.
How would you have known? Oh, yeah, I reckon obviously that girl is just pretending to be dead and she's got a thing covering her wrist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that you couldn't have...
No, but I was sort of hoping because I was a bit shocked. Yeah. Like, oh, no, one of the teenage girls.
Because that was like, how did this murder happen? And so, yeah, that was the kind of thing when afterwards you're like, there's no time for that murder to have happened. And why was the ruby man? So it
didn't really make any sense, but then...
So that's why if she did die, you'd be like, that's weird.
So
then you go, oh, yeah, it was weird. And that's why she wasn't actually dead. So it sort of is.
And also for the Christmas special, you're kind of like, oh, thank God, she's alive.
Thank God that child didn't die.
Yeah, this is nice.
Ran up with a brutal murder.
Yeah, she could end up kissing the 60 or 7-year-old detective at the end instead. I imagine it must have been on the cheek. But, yeah, it still seems a bit funny.
Come on, Agatha. Well, that's the thing with Agatha. She's like, hey, well, come on, give us a break. A lot has changed over the last 50 or 60 years.
Can't give up.
Can't give up. Oh, teenagers can't make out with old Belgian detectives anymore.
Oh, back in my day. The only thing left to do is to give it a score out of 5, guys. What do you,
do you think? I really enjoyed it. Tandy having Suchet to picture in my head as we go along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, out of 5, you say?
Out of 5.
I'm going to say a 4.3.
4.3 out of 5. Love how specific that is. Thank you.
Is that too specific?
No, it's great.
I'll say 4 otherwise.
No, 4.3. Nevin?
I'll give it an even 4.
For it, which is also what I'm going to give it, because there was plenty of stuff in there and there's little funny bits of, you know, Poirot's character, you know, obsessed with being comfortable with heating and stuff. He's just so specific with things.
It's a sitcom at the start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then by the end you're like, you know, it could be a murder mystery, but then it wasn't. So, yeah.
It was a bit convoluted, though.
Yes.
When you think
about it. I mean, a lot of things, like getting him there. Yeah, why the prince and stuff. I would have much preferred it if it was someone's like, oh, this is all I have, this ruby. I needed it to get my kids through school.
Yeah, like a family heirloom or something.
Oh, this is a rich person who's lost one of their many valuable things. It won't affect him in any way, apart from embarrassing them a little bit.
It'll be embarrassing, you understand.
Yeah, and then it'll feel like Poirot is doing it, you know, as a kindness or something, rather than as like, I guess I'll do it because there's heating.
Yeah.
And I presume he's been getting paid as well.
Yeah.
So.
Is it common for neither of Jap or Hastings or his assistant? What's her name?
Yeah, Miss Lemon or Miss Lemon.
Who's Hastings?
Hastings is sort of like his friend that uses a device in the series, at least, where it helps Poirot kind of explain things because Hastings is a bit daft.
Yeah, it's a bit of a psyche. Right. And, you know, the actor that plays him, Hugh Fraser, reads the audiobooks.
Oh.
Beautiful voice.
Amazing. He's so good. He's my favorite English voice.
I think out of about 25 novels or something, I think Hastings only appears in 7 or 8 in the written ones. Right. So he's not there every time, yeah.
Right.
Just when they need to do some exposition.
Yeah.
Explain it to somebody.
But what about Miss Lemon?
Similar sort of thing. Yeah, they're just there sometimes and then... but they all come back for the final one, Curtin.
Oh, just, like Seinfeld.
Know. Yeah, which kind of wraps it all. Yeah, exactly. Like Seinfeld. That's a big trial.
Yeah, that finishes with Poirot in jail, solving a jail time mystery.
That'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That actually makes more sense than the Seinfeld.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Christmas special, which this is the last episode of the year, so appreciate you being on it.
Thanks so much.
And we're going to have a little break from Book Cheat for a little while. I'm going to come back the first Tuesday in February 2021, which gives me a little bit of time over Christmas and January to read some bigger books.
Yes.
Finally going to do War and Peace.
That's finally. That's right. All 280 characters or whatever it is.
Jesus.
Oh, it's so many.
I'm like, what is it, a tweet?
Very good.
There's like maps at the back of family trees and sort of things. Right. It's quite confusing.
Is it any good? Do you know if it's any good?
Apparently incredible.
Oh, right. Okay. Worthwhile. Worth all the...
Yeah, but I think it would be hard reading for a podcast. So maybe I'll just read it in my own time.
Okay.
But your stuff will, I imagine, continue to rock and roll out into the future, and people can obviously catch up on older episodes. Yeah. You've got a couple more left at this stage in the Umbrella Academy Primate Special.
Yeah, and we're finally, because we're allowed to have, as we have today, have 3 people in the studio. So we're having our first guest of the Umbrella Academy season. We're having Cass Page in for the last couple episodes.
Oh, awesome.
From Sans Pants.
Looking forward to that.
And she was on the original Umbrella Academy episode a year or so back. So, really looking forward to that. And Do Go On, for people who don't know Do Go On, it's very much a similar show to Book Cheat. Instead of a fictional book that Dave reads, though, Dave or I or Jess, the other host, will tell a real story, usually from a historical event or a biography or... it could be all sorts of things.
Yeah, many things.
Serial killer episodes. So there's all sorts of stuff. And it's just as fun as this.
It's great fun. I love
Sorry to it. Big it up. It's almost as fun as this.
Thank you. And Evan, Gamey Game.
Yes.
Your fantastic show on the stupid old channel on YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube. It's one you have to look at. You got to watch it. Sorry, Matt. Can't just use your ears for that. No, you actually could. There is a podcast version, so you could just listen to it if you really just want to use the ears. Yeah, just go to YouTube and search for Gamey Gamey Game or Gamey Game or, you know, any sort of combination of those words or probably.
Game, game, gamey. Do you think that works?
Oh, maybe. I reckon you could try it.
We'll anyway. Try it now.
Yeah, it's just a funny chat panel show about video games. Nothing too serious. Has a lot of people that are familiar with the Do Go On and sort of Weekly Planet sort of a network.
Yeah, that's right. Many people that you would have heard on Book Cheat as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Like Ben Russell's a regular, Naomi Higgins, but of course Matt's been on. And you've been on, Dave, on occasion.
That's right. I'm ready to talk about the 2012 video game.
Yeah, we've got a Christmas. We've sort of haven't been doing as much this year because of lockdown, but we're doing a Christmas special. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we will also be back sort of towards the end of January-ish, around the same-ish time as this comes back. So,
there an Agatha Christie or Poirot type video game?
Do you know that there is? On Nintendo Switch, it just came out.
Oh, yeah, right. Wow.
Evan, there you go.
The ABC Murders. And I believe that the Belt Detective is voiced by David Suchet himself.
Holy really?
The video game. So I've put my name down. I put that on a couple of Christmas wish lists. So I'm really hoping.
A couple of copies of it.
Exactly. So I'm really hoping I'll keep everyone posted if I hopefully get that for Christmas. It's great. I haven't put down a game on a Christmas list for a long time, so I'm excited.
Yeah, right.
Oh, fun. That's I watched the maybe John Malkovich version.
Yeah,
of that
they
recently.
Did a much darker adaptation, yes.
There's been a lot of grim Christie BBC versions in recent times. Super grim. Watch them if you feel like getting bummed out.
Yeah, that's right. And just to confirm, if you Google Game Game Gamey, you will get Gamey Gamey Game. So just so you know, Evan.
There you go. Any combination of those words. As long as there's a gamey in there and a game, I suppose. Yeah, go check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun show. Even if you don't like video games, you probably might enjoy it. Probably might. Maybe.
Yeah. I think you definitely will.
I'm not making any promises.
It is a lot of fun with a lot of fun people on there, so it's great. And thank you so much again for joining me. And until next year, I will say Merry Christmas and
Books Forever!
Books Forever!
Woo! Hey, book cheaters, just Dave here, the book chook, dropping in very quickly at the end of the episode to thank you for listening to it. There it is, the final one for 2020. We got there. What a weird year it's been, but I'm really glad that I've had this podcast to pretty consistently come out. You know, I've been able to escape by reading the books and then also just having the guests. You know, we had to do a lot of it over Zoom this year, but, you know, it's still a lot of fun to hang out with those people, make the show, and then put it out, and then... always nice to hear from you guys at home as well. So I hope you've enjoyed it this year. We will be back. I say we, it's me. I'll be back at the start of February with a new year of Book Cheat. I usually like to take the December and January month to read a bit more, get ahead a bit so it's not coming down to the wire like I'm reading it on Monday afternoon, writing it on a Monday night, recording it Tuesday morning, putting it out like I have been the last couple of times. So I'll get a bit ahead, have a bit of a break too. And don't forget, you can always suggest a book for me to cover by clicking the link in the description of this episode, and then I'll give you a shout out when I get to it. And speaking of shout outs, I've nearly caught up on all of the Patreon shout outs. Anyone that supports the show on Patreon, patreon.com/dogoonpod. Thank you so much for doing so. It really keeps the show going. You've also, this year, I've been shouting out to people's favourite books. And I've only got one more to go for this year. And then next year, if you are a patron or a Patreon supporter, keep your eyes peeled because I'll be having a new system, be posting a new link on Patreon and in the Facebook group. So it's a little bit easier for me to keep track of anyone who does want a shout out. Basically, if you support the show on Patreon, it keeps it going. I can keep it coming out throughout the year. And you're also supporting Do Go On, Matt's show that we talked about, Primates. He's got another music one called Listen Now, and our Patreon-only show, Phrasing the Bar, because we put out that and two other bonus episodes every month for people that support the show on Patreon. So if you want to chuck in a couple of bucks, that would be awesome. And the one person to thank, and a big, big thank you to Aaron Romero. Really appreciate your support, Aaron. It's all about you today. Usually I thank five or six people, but you're the last one, last cab off the rank, so this is your moment. And I'm going to say thank you so much. And Aaron's written in, hello, Dave. I usually get people, I should say, to say their favourite book. So Aaron's written in, hello, my favourite book is The Lord of the Rings. I was introduced to Lord of the Rings when the first movie came out and read the entire series in a week or two. Wow, that's good effort. I've always loved Tolkien's stories, characters, and world building. Here's to the book chooks, books forever! Awesome. Thanks so much, Aaron. Really appreciate your support. And one more time, if you are a supporter of the show on Patreon, keep your eyes peeled. I'll be putting out a new way of getting a shout out early in the new year. But yeah, that's it. Quick one this week at the end. Thank you so much again to Evan and Matt for coming on the show and to every guest we've had this year, everyone who's listened to the show. I really do appreciate it. And until next year, I'm going to say it one last time, and that is, of course, books forever! Have a great new year. Thanks, everyone.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.